Hi, and welcome to the first installment of a program called The Art of Relating. I'm Zach Schwartz. I'm a psychologist in Eugene, Oregon by trade, but I do not do psychotherapy or counseling over the radio, so that's not what this is about. What this is about is learning and sharing and developing a set of concepts and skills that I call effective humanistic interaction skills. I call it the art of relating because I believe it is an art. The most complicated thing we do in our day, I would argue, is interact with another human being. You're hooking up two 300 trillion cell molecular biocomputers and trying to get something mutually respectful and mutually effective done, whatever the agenda may be. And that it requires a lot of skill to do well. Yet we get no specific training in that while we're growing up, just practice on the fly, so to speak. And it's really easy to tangle wires or mess it up. I see a lot of couples, and one of the first things I ask them to do in treatment to improve their relationship, and they all say communication is what we want to work on, is slow down. You can't learn to speak differently, relate differently, make different choices in how you interact, going at full speed all the time. People are very content is alluring. They get drawn to get the business done. But this effective humanistic interaction is working on the dance you do with each other while you're communicating. It's what I call process, and getting people to recognize the difference between process and content is also by itself a learning curve. They have to get used to thinking about it that way. And so it's an art. It's going to require intuition, it's going to require feeling, it's going to require thought and sensation, all combined to apply these skills. Now, over the past four decades, I've developed these concepts and skills into a system for humanistic interaction, and I want to talk to you a little about where that came from. In 1983, I was working with White Bird Clinic, giving medical and crisis intervention services to the community, and as well at the Oregon Country Fair out in Vineta, Oregon, which is a tremendous event. And in 1983, a partner of mine named Douglas Parker and I noticed that on more than half of the crisis calls we responded to, we ended up dealing with, solving problems with, calming down the person in the Country Fair staff t-shirt. So we thought, gee, why don't we teach some of these skills to the staff and maybe we wouldn't have to work so hard. So in 1983, we did a workshop for several hundred staff members. And in that year, we called it crisis intervention. Complaints about the staff and fights among the staff went down by more than half. It was so effective that by the third year that we were teaching it, the fair made it mandatory. If you're on the staff, you have to take the training, so that everybody was on the same page to some degree in how they talk to each other and how they interact. Then we started getting the feedback that, gee, this is not only a great set of skills for crisis intervention, but what we heard from the people taking the training was that these skills also work with how I talk to my spouse, or a boyfriend, or a girlfriend, or how I talk to my kids, or how I talk to my coworkers, or even a person in a store that I'm buying something from. So it had a much more general application than just crisis intervention. So we changed it from crisis intervention to humanistic intervention training. But the acronym for that was HIT, and that didn't seem to fit with humanistic interacting. So we changed it again to humanistic intervention, which is just hi, and we've been teaching it under that label ever since. Now, I just wrote a book called Effective Humanistic Intervention. Most of this material is in the book, and it's available on our website, dyinskills.com. which is the website for the company, Dynamic Interaction Skills. You'll find the books and trainings and webinars and contacts on the website. So visit if you wish. Now, the important thing about learning these concepts and skills is that you actually can use them and apply them. And in psychology, in psychotherapy, we've learned over the years that insight does not, despite popular belief, manage behavior. Most of our behavior does not come from free will. Things we do impulsively, things we do instinctively, things we do by habit or learned are reactions. They're not responses. We don't choose those reactions. They just kind of happen. And so to take an insight, and most of us will agree about what's wise and good about some of these concepts and skills, the next step is to internalize it. Get it into your own hard drive. Make believe you're teaching it to someone and see if you can do that in your own words and in your own way. As you work it into the habits of how you think, that's called internalizing a concept or a skill. And the last part is integrating it, actually getting it into how you act when you're in real time interacting with someone. I once went to a concert. I was just there to listen. It was an outdoor show. And there was a long fence around the place. You've all kind of seen that. And every so often there was a security gate that was getting people in. And one of the security workers approached me and asked if I was the Zach that taught humanistic intervention. And I said, maybe. Why do you want him? And he said, well, I just wanted to thank you. I took your training a couple of times. And my job here has been very easy, and I'm really enjoying myself, and we're getting the work done. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, a car pulls in where the buses are going to come, and I get a smile on my face, and I ground myself, and as I'm walking up to the car, I'm saying, hi, bro, and, oh, nice T-shirt. I was at that Led Zeppelin show with you, and how you doing today? And we, you know, shoot the shit for a couple of seconds, and then I say, you know, if you leave your car where it is, in about 5 minutes, a bus is going to take your left fender clean off, and I don't want that to happen, and you don't want that to happen. But if you come with me, I'll show you where you can park the car, and we'll get you into the show no problem, and you'll be enjoying yourself in a few minutes. And the guy says, sure, great, thanks. And we move his car, and I let him in, and the whole intervention took, you know, 5 minutes. And everything felt good. He said, this guy working security at the next gate down? I said, yeah. He said, I don't think he's ever had your training. And I laughed and I said, what do you mean? He said, well, a guy pulls in and puts his car over there where the buses are going to pull up. And this guy yells 50 feet across the gate, move your darn car. Which causes the guy driving to roll his window down, turn the car off and say, why don't you make me? And then it proceeds to take 20 minutes, six security guys and maybe a cop, to get the guy to move his car. And everybody has a headache, and it doesn't work out. So I think what you taught me is valuable, and thanks, and carry on. I said, thanks for the feedback. So what security teams learn when I train them is that this system of communication works better, it's more efficient, you get solutions done more quickly, and everybody feels better in the process. And if you're working for an event or a business company, it's good for business, it's good for spirit, and it's good for getting the work done. For everybody to use these kinds of concepts and skills to love and respect each other and to negotiate clearly. And over the next bunch of weeks, we're going to be going through the curriculum on the show. So let me share an example of the application of what I think humanistic is about. I was many years ago out at one of the booths. I was called out. I'm one of the managers out there, and I was troubleshooting to a booth to where they reported an individual who was interrupting their business, interrupting their booth, bothering them a great deal. They said, you've got to get this guy out of the fair, quote unquote. I said, chill out. Let me go talk to him. I'll be back in a little while. And I went about 50 yards away down the trail, and sure enough, I had a description. There was the guy, kind of covered in mud and sitting on a log and nothing on except a small G-string looking thing. Anyway, I came up to him, smile on my face, grounded as I was, and I said, hi, I'm Zach. What's your name? And I was wearing, of course, the radio and the management tags and the staff t-shirt and all that stuff. And so he turned to me kind of angrily and said, gruffly, are you throwing me out? And I smiled and I said, wow, I didn't say anything about throwing anybody out. All I said was, hi. I said, let's start again. I'm going to go over there and I'll walk over like we're meeting for the first time, okay? And I took about 10 steps back, and then I walked over again, and I said, hi, I'm Zach. What's your name? And he looked at the ground, and he made this, like, mudra, this hand shape thing with both arms, and he said, my name is, and it was some classical, fairly deep, fairly symbolic title, to which I said, oh, couldn't you just be Mike or Tom or something? You know, I'm on a schedule and I've got a few minutes. And I laughed and he smiled a little. And I sat down next to him and we talked for a while. And importantly, I listened for a while. And at the end of it, us sharing our realities about what had happened, I said, I think we can work this out. You know, all we need you to do is make that booth, that immediate area, out of bounds for you. The rest of the fairs is yours to play in and to interact in, and you and your friend. And what we're going to do is we're going to move your camp from next to their booth to another spot. The security person here, Barbara, will help you pack up your stuff, and we'll find a spot for you that works for you. That'll be very nice. And please enjoy the rest of the weekend, and it'll all be fine. He says, good. So I'm starting back toward the booth, and he says, but wait, I have to give them a gift to make the deal official. And I said, sure, what's the gift? I'll bring it with me. And he went and to a booth near where we were, and he bought this incredible handmade $300 item, pulled the cash out of his little G-string. I said, oh my God, where did you? Never mind, sorry I asked. And he puts the $300 down on the counter, gives me this incredible piece, says, bring this to them as a gift to cement the deal. And I said, okay, I'll be back. Don't go away. And I went back to the booth. I said, he accepted the deal. He's not going to bother you at all. We're going to move his camp. He's not going to be around your booth. It's all good. And he presented you this gift as to cement the deal. And they, son, okay, but we have to give a gift back. It's an exchange. I said, okay, but I only have so much time. And they went into the booth and came out with this other incredible multi-hundred-dollar item. It was like a ceremonial pipe with feathers and bejeweled, and it was beautiful in an elk case. And I said, okay, I'll give this to him. And they said, wait, we have to add a note. And I said, could you keep the note short? Because, like, I'm running out of time here. And they said, sure. And the guy writes out like a half of a page on a piece of loose leaf paper, puts it in the leather pouch, the elk pouch. I bring the elk pouch and the pipe back to our gentleman and he says, you know, he says, smiling, I like you. Your eyes tell me that your spirit's coming from a good place. And I said, well, thanks. You too. And I give him this thing. And I'm starting to leave. And I say, oh. I said, there's a note in the back. And without taking his eyes off me, he takes the note out of the bag. And he takes a big lighter out of his little pouch and sets the note on fire. And I go, wait, you're not going to read the note? And he makes the same mudra with his hands toward the ground, and he says, I already know what it says. I said, wow, that's really cool. Have a nice fair. and I was done. And the point here is, it didn't take that long to do all that. And it would have been so easy to end up in a fight with this guy that would have required a half a dozen security people, maybe a sheriff. He would have gotten thrown out of the fair, maybe prosecuted or arrested. And none of that was necessary. It was all about the process of how we interact, which is, of course, what this program is about. I ask groups all the time, so what does humanistic mean? Why do we call it humanistic interacting? And sometimes I get a lot of blank stares. But humanism, humanistic psychology, is really the third school in the psychology, just quick history and systems lesson. The first school was psychoanalytic, Freudian, unconscious, repressed feelings, get them out, resolve them as a system of psychotherapy or psychology. The second school was behaviorism. That was back in the 20s and 30s when that got started. And that was about operant conditioning and classical conditioning and all of our parenting skills programs today and a lot of other things, changing habits, treatment of addiction, include operant and classical conditioning models because they're still effective mechanisms for helping people change behavior. But then in the 1950s, and then popularized in the 60s, started the school of humanistic psychology, where the goal was self-actualization. Now, I want to talk with you a little more about parenting skills training, because in a lot of ways, the evolution in that field, how we parent our children, is parallel to where I think we're going with how we treat each other. I was raised in the early 50s, and my parents were World War II people. They survived that war. They came home and started their families. They were not very tuned into operant conditioning or humanistic psychology, although they did love me and we had a pretty good family. But the way they parented us was, you get one warning, you do what we're telling you to do, or we kill you. And, you know, kill you meant something that was going to be scary and painful. And so the good part of that was when they set those hard limits with us, as rough as it may have been, they were giving us an underlying message that we were worth it and that we were cared about. Because if they didn't care, they wouldn't bother to put those heavy, threatening limits on us. And somewhere inside, I knew that. But the bad part of that is that it was scary, and by today's put up with that. And when we grew up and became parents, we certainly did not want to follow that model because, you know, abuse is terrible and we didn't want to hurt our kids or scare our kids or make them feel bad. The tricky part is, it's essential to being a parent that we set limits and offer that authority and offer that guidance and to people that are young and just learning how to manage themselves correctly. So if we just let go of the abuse, but that was a beginning, but then didn't set strong limits with our kids, they didn't get the message that they were worthwhile or cared about, and they tended to either get spoiled or run amok because of those lapses. So effective parenting skill training includes both humanistic principles. You can always be loving and encouraging and positive with your children, which of course we all want to be. And at the same time, you can set limits. But instead of being threatening, you can use the mechanisms of operant conditioning. Offer choices, offer rewards, offer consequences. Let them see outcomes of their behavior, some that pay off, some that don't. So I was with my one of my daughters and my grandchildren at the coast, a little family reunion, and I heard my daughter say to her 10-year-old son, stop playing the video game and go down to the beach. And then he ignored her. So she repeated it a little louder. Stop playing the video game, get down to the beach. And that went on for 3 or 4 or 5 rounds. And I said to her, do you mind if I take a crack at this as the grandfather? And she said, sure, give it a try. And I said, grandson,
And I waited, and I said, grandson, Earth the grandson, until I got his attention. And then I said, okay, listen to me carefully. Here are your choices now. If you stop playing the game in the next 30 seconds and you head for the beach, then I will be on your side to have you have at least an hour of more video game fun before dinner tonight. But if in the next 20 seconds you haven't closed the computer and you haven't gone headed for the beach, then the game goes away till tomorrow. So think about it. I'm rooting for you. I love you. Make a good choice. You know, keep the computer before dinner or not see it till tomorrow. And lo and behold, he shut the computer and headed for the beach. See, combining humanistic and behavioral mechanics, he certainly moved. And I didn't have to be violent, and I didn't have to get angry. We're going to do shows on anger in a couple of weeks. But by giving him those choices and staying loving and positive, it wasn't a hard mechanism to get what I wanted to happen. And he still walked away with the feeling that he was worthwhile and cared about. Somewhere deep down inside, he knows that he ought to stop playing and go to the beach. Sometimes our kids do that dance just to get the hit that they're worthwhile and cared about and that someone's looking after them. And you don't have to be violent or mean to do that. So back to the third school, the psychology of humanism. And what humanistic means is, although you can change behavior with criticism and judgment and threat, it changes even more effectively and quicker when you treat people with love and respect and empathy and consideration and care. And that's part of what humanistic means. So one of the basic concepts I want to begin with is what I call three-chip interactions. So when you interact with someone, there's some business, there's some agenda item, there's some reason that you're interacting. And getting that business taken care of efficiently and to the agreement of both people is a business chip. If we get the business done effectively and we're both satisfied with that, we each win one chip. And that's called a business chip. And this is a win-win scenario. So I want both of us to win three chips. But business is not enough. And so the second chip is what I call a love and respect chip. If in the process of getting this business done, we treat each other with love and respect and care, that's a two-chip interaction. If I'm putting up a tent with someone, if we get the tent up in the right spot and efficiently, that's the business chip. If while we're doing that, we manage to feel and share love and respect and care and consideration, then we have a two-chip interaction. We got the tent up, and we treated each other well in the process. The third chip is a fun chip. So besides getting the tent up or getting the business done and treating each other lovingly and respectfully while we do it, I'm also trying to have a pleasant day or a good time. Now, some situations are inherently not too pleasant, and then the fun chip becomes just maximize the quality of the experience appropriate to what's going on. So if we can get the tent up to our mutual satisfaction and in a reasonable amount of time and treat each other with love and respect while we do it and have some fun while we do it, then we have what I call a three-chip interaction. It's just a way of thinking about things. And over the weeks, we're going to discuss the specific skills you will need to make that happen most of the time. But for now, it's just to get you to start thinking about all three chips when you interact with anyone. Three-chip interactions. Start training yourself to pay attention to wanting it and getting all three of those. The other concept I want to introduce in today's program is another threesome, just like the three chips, except this time we're going to say ground, process, and content. Content, which I think is very often the least important of those for having a quality life, but still matters. Content is the third priority. getting the business chip, getting that business done efficiently. That's content. But at the same time that you're tracking that, what may be even more important for having what I think is a quality life is process. And process is how we dance the dance, is a higher priority very often than content. More important than process is ground, which is just within myself. How centered do I feel? We're going to do a whole installment on grounding the next time we talk next week. But for now, get that you being centered, you having your feet on the ground, that comes first. And I have to be grounded. If I'm not feeling grounded, I want to stop the content and the process and take a moment to ground. And we'll talk about, again, next week, more about how to do that, because that itself is an interesting transaction. Two is process. That's me and you. How we're talking to each other. Are we listening? Are we getting angry? Are we being sarcastic? So one is ground, that's within me. Two is process, that's between us. And three is content, that's us, me and you, and the item we're dealing with. So one, two, three, ground, process, content. Anytime anybody wants to interact with me, say my spouse calls me on the phone, the first thing I want to do often is go, hold on a second, find my center, and then say hi. Or when we did crisis intervention, we used to let the phone ring twice, pick it up on the third ring. The first ring wakes me up. The second ring, I ground and center. The third ring, I say hi. So ground, process, content. Start noticing that in any of your interactions. Notice all three issues. Start paying attention to all three issues. And then you're beginning to train yourself in this way. So people will come to me and say, oh, I just had a one chipper. I say, what do you mean? They say, well, we got the tent moved, but we hate each other and I didn't have a good time. And so what we talk about is how they can get more chips the next time. It's not about blame. It's not about judgment. It's not about them having to feel bad. We're all learning to do this together. And so we talk about how they can get more chips the next time. Okay, so now there's homework to do. And homework is what I call learning to working on integrating some of these things. And the homework this week that I would suggest has to do with awareness. Start watching for all three things, the three chips and ground, process, and content as you interact with anybody, family, business, in a store, anyone. Watch for the three chips. Are we having fun? Are we treating each other well? And are we getting the content done efficiently? Or watch for ground, process, and content. Do I feel grounded? And a lot more on that next week. Do I feel grounded? And is the process going well? Are we getting along? Are we treating each other well? And are we getting the business done efficiently? Start to get your mind to track and juggle those three things, not just the content, because that's where people get stuck a lot. Now, I'd like to take questions and share comments, and the way you can do that is please email your questions and comments to Zach, Z-A-K, at kepw.org. And I will try next show to share and answer as many questions and share as many comments as I can. So have a great week. Think about the concepts we've shared. I'll see you next Monday.